Hello, everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend Patrick Dean, who does not take it real seriously.
But who does remember last week's episode, unlike some of us.
Only because we just talked about it 30 seconds ago. Do you remember now?
It was about a drum, I think.
Okay, do you remember what the ghost was?
In the drum.
Okay, it was a very good guess. Very good guess, but
and it's correct.
Yeah. Well, we are back. We're back for episode 154, I think we decided, right?
Yes.
Is that how the math worked out?
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Which means we're just about, not quite, I guess, but just about it, 3 years.
Oh, goodness gracious.
That's crazy. It's crazy. How are you feeling 3 years in?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Just, again, just really excited for a summer break to come up.
We just got to get through sweeps. I wish we had sweeps. I think we would kill it sweeps. If there was a sweeps or podcast, we would do so well. We have such good content, you know?
Absolutely.
Every episode, every time I write a notes for an episode, I'm thinking in my head, like, if this were like Friends circa 1993, this would fucking kill.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We would do so great.
If Friends was about rural ghosts of the 19th century, I think we would both be on it. I really do.
yeah, no kidding. And you would be Joey.
Could this episode be any more haunted? That's what we would say.
I saw a ghost. I said, kapow! Yeah. Woo. Woo. Let's see. What do you got there?
Got a little bit of a Smirnoff vodka from an airplane bottle I found in the cabinet. And a dash of 7-Up tropical soda.
Tropical soda?
We're drinking
the off-brand bullshit. Is that
we're drinking the Harried Father tonight? A little bit of this.
What is that can? No, that's
how it's 7-Up tropical. It's not very good. Huh.
I mean, I equal parts hate and really love the can.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's quite something.
Yeah. all right.
Yeah, we're back to drinking the Harried Father. Two things you find in the cabinet.
Boosh.
Drink.
Let's just get into it. What do you say? Just get into it.
Got nothing else to do. They got the bathtub. Got the bathtub screaming in the background, but that's not a
problem. Yeah, we can hear that big, but that's exactly. Jeremy, we're so lucky to have Jeremy. Mm-hmm. We're so lucky to not pay Jeremy a dime. Mm-hmm.
Jeremy is getting paid in experience and in reusable audio filters. I would hope.
Man, I bet. I wonder. There must be some sort of market for that sort of filter, right? Like, Jeremy, if there is, you must sell them because you have to make a penny off of this.
Watch Jeremy be the only person making money off of this podcast. That would be.
He's retiring. He's so retiring fitting. Off audio filters that drown out Patrick's bathtub, toilet, and washing machine.
I can see him on Reddit like 5 years ago. Like, yeah, I mean. Developing audio filters is where the money is, but it's so difficult to generate audio with a bunch of random shit in the background to filter.
I can't find anything organic to actually work with.
And then Jeremy listens to episode one of our podcast, and he, like a light bulb, bing, goes off. Right. Wait a second. They seem dumb. They seem like they don't understand audio. Okay.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy. God, I'll tell you, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that ended up being true. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, you know what? Good for you. Good for you.
Good on you, buddy.
Anyway, what's going on with your life?
That's about it. It's continuing to rain about every 6 hours on and off.
Is that like what's happening out there?
Yeah. It's like just like water torture. Just slowly dripping down from the sky.
I
don't know.
I think there are some POWs you might... disagree with you.
I just said that. Hey, I did not specify. It could be any water torture, Clayton.
okay. We'll just skip ahead of that and say, so the Alexa has told me every single day for the last 10 days that we're gonna have thunderstorms.
Ooh.
And it has not happened. We have not seen a drop of rain until today.
Do you have your Alexa set to the correct zip code? Because we've been getting thunderstorms every single day for 10 days.
I am wondering if maybe this is perhaps Noah going offline slowly but surely.
Mm.
They cut funding. So now our weather is fucked. In a different way than it has been fucked for the last couple decades.
Yeah, like maybe this is a way that Noah calls out whenever servers are down, it just tells everybody in the world there's a thunderstorm, and you're supposed to know, oh,
go to your basement.
This is the code. This is the code. It makes sense now.
Yeah, probably so. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Anything else going on besides the deluge?
No. I'm doing a really good job of not paying attention to the Blues game right now. Doing such a good job. But the score is 2-1.
Thought about the Blues a real long time. But I know that I talked to a senior vice president at the NHL a couple weeks ago, because that's the kind of circle I run in.
Mm-hmm, clearly.
And she was talking about, you know, the upcoming playoffs. Mm-hmm. And the Blues did not enter into the conversation.
Oh, that's a shame.
So I don't know. She was also talking about how the Giants... No, what's...
The Giants? Yeah, go on. Sure.
We went to a winery today. When the Giants and the Eagles... long day full of alcohol.
The Stanley Cup playoffs.
You know, the New York one, not the Islanders, the other one. The Rangers? Dave loves so much. That's the one.
Right, yes.
The Rangers.
Not Giants. Same colors, no. Though.
I've had so much to drink today. Yeah, they got the red and the blue. She was talking about how it's actually kind of a fun season because the Rangers typically will like carry the New York market
right
to the television
right
because they're consistently in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case this year, I guess. I guess they really shit the bed pretty early on. And so she's like, it's kind of the Wild West, which is fun, but not in a way that we like.
Because not everyone in the Wild West has a television, we have found, unlike mm-hmm. people in New York, which do. So
yeah, nothing but televisions.
Yeah. Winnipeg seems like a lot of fun, you know, in a textbook, but boy, nobody up there watches television, I'll tell you that much.
There are fewer like jet level technology than you would expect based on the name of their team.
While we are winning the Manitoba market, not as critical as you might think in terms of ad revenue.
Oh man. So anyway, now that I've put my NHL bona fides out there, that I don't know any of the team names, but I do know a senior vice president at the league. there's a couple things. So we're recording on a Sunday night, which is atypical for us.
Correct. Yes.
Because you're busy on our usual Monday and I cannot record on Tuesday or Wednesday because I'm going to New York for a quick trip.
Oh.
I'm going to get on the train in Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go up to New York and I'm going to see Glengarry Glen Ross on the Broadway.
Ooh.
With our friend Dave Bloom.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's one with Bob Odenkirk and mm-hmm. Kieran Culkin and Bill Burr. And mm-hmm. I'm very excited.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited.
Very curious how Bill Burr is going to perform in this. I've only seen Bill Burr on like podcasts.
Yeah, I think he's probably going to take some breaks and be like, now let me riff on this a bit. And, you know, get like a follow spot. And David Mamet will show up on stage and probably shoot him in the face, I assume. That seems like something David Mamet would do. And I can't wait. It's going to be exciting. Okay, great.
No. Is Glengarry Glen, is that the one where they're like
the leads.
Wall Street traders?
Yeah, I gotta get the leads. They're like real estate guys.
Real estate traders.
Gotta get the leads.
Okay, yeah.
The leads.
Yeah, the realtors. I get it.
Gotta get the leads.
Yeah.
Is it real estate? It's been a long time. I have no idea. Movie.
Yeah.
I think that's Alec Baldwin and Jack Lemmon and Al Pacino. Mm. You know.
Yeah, you're thinking of Grumpy Old Men, I think. It's a different
movie. It's very similar cast. Yeah, Walter Matthau did not make the cut for this. The Glengarry Glen Ross, but similar.
Of all the stage production things they brought back from the 80s and 90s, never Grumpy Old Men. That's real. I'm concerned. Do they not have like two fitting leads? Or did they reboot Grumpy Old Men just as a, you know, like in test markets and it failed? I don't know.
It's interesting. It's a great question because.
Anybody listening, just so you know, I have dibs on Grumpy Old Men, the stage adaptation.
TM, TM, TM. Now, when Walter Matthau died quite a long time ago, right. That would kind of put the kibosh on things because he's the one. He's the right. one you want. He's got the face that looks just...
Absolutely.
As they say in that set of films, I think, like a mackerel. And that was that was exactly the right way to say
That's
it,
correct.
Jack Lemmon.
Yes.
Who would you put in Grumpy Old Men on stage?
Got to be Bill Murray. Today? Got to be Bill Murray.
Oh,
Bill Murray's God, a good one.
Yeah, that's solid.
And ooh, even though it's kind of a similar-ish vibe, but not perfect. Who is the he's not quite old enough yet, but it could be part of it.
The, yeah, you got makeup and prosthetics and things. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy that played the sheriff in Stranger Things, and he was just in the Thunderbolts movie.
Oh shit! Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, he is great.
He would be. He would be good.
Our podcast listeners in particular are screaming at us for not being able to think of his name. David. I'm so mad at myself. So mad at myself for that. David Harbour.
David Harbour. Yes.
David Harbour. Second Hellboy himself. Yes. David Harbour.
David Harbour, Bill Murray. Get out the checkbook. That's what I'm saying.
I think Aaron was in a show with David Harbour once.
Really?
Is that right?
So she has his phone number. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. It's weird. Like she's the kind of human being where it's like we will be watching a show, Netflix or Hulu or Prime, whatever, it doesn't matter. And she'll be like, "Oh, that's my friend, so and so," or "Oh yeah, I remember." David. Yeah.
I'm so glad David's doing well.
Yeah. Like we're watching your Friends and Neighbors right now, the new John Hamm show,
right?
Which I'm really loving because Jonathan Tropper wrote it. Didn't even know that when we went into it. Love Jonathan Tropper. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read or watched, This Is Where I Leave You. Holy cow, folks, go check it out. No one does. Wealthy white male existential dread like Jonathan Tropper. I mean, truly, it's chef kiss. But it's a great, we're enjoying the show, but we're watching it and there's this character who is John Hamm's character's sister. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Oh my God, it's my friend so-and-so." And it's like, so yeah. And it's like another a person that she has been on stage with and knows, a little bit at least. And like this person has like a huge role and she's incredible in this show. And like, this is a very regular occurrence in our household. It's like, "Oh, look, so-and-so is in this. Oh, good for them." It's like, what is going on? On a somewhat actually related note, actually, I have one story before we get into the ghost story tonight, which is we were at a couple of our friends' house last night. I've told you, we've talked in this podcast before about how my provost and his wife, who is also at my college, we've become very close with them. They have a daughter who's our oldest daughter's age, and we hang out a lot. And they invited us over for dinner last night, so we went, and so we're enjoying dinner in the dining room. The girls are off playing, in the room. And the conversation eventually turns to like people, like interactions you've had with famous people.
Oh, okay.
So I, of course, share my Hugh Jackman high five story where I pushed my then future ex-wife in the face away and high fived, and that whole thing was on Oprah. That was a fun one. I talked about actually how we saw 300 and then jumped into the Transformers lot across the street illegally and saw all that stuff. Talked about that and like everyone's like sharing like Aaron's not speaking.
Right,
because like she's got the trump cards,
genie of famous people interactions. Yeah,
yes. So she's like she's being demure and she's holding back, and so we're all trying to get in our stories before Aaron takes over because she's gonna win the game for sure. Mm-hmm. And so we're all sharing, and so and then Paul, my provost and good friend, said when he worked at a theater in D.C. because he's a PhD in Shakespeare, and so he's got a theater background working in theater, Shakespearean theater. He's like, "Yeah, three famous people I met when I was working at this theater in DC were Mel Gibson, Christopher Plummer, and Patti LuPone."
Okay.
And I said, "How many of them hit you?" Which I thought was a great joke. And no one else laughed, but I liked it. But he said that Mel Gibson, this was like after like just post Hamlet Mel Gibson. So pretty early Mel Gibson.
Sure.
Was just kind of mean and not nice.
Right.
You say Christopher Plummer was just like great, but such an asshole, like just so like above everyone as you would expect him. And Patti LuPone, apparently incredibly kind, like wonderful and joyful. So he tells that story, the stories of those interactions. And then he's like, "And I guess that's it. Aaron, you probably have some good stories." And Aaron starts to kind of like open her mouth. Mm. And then Carrie, Paul's wife, says, "Wait a minute, Paul, you left one out." He's like, "I don't think so." She goes, "You dated Parker Posey." And he said, "Oh yeah, I forgot about that." And I said, "Wait, everybody stop." I said, "You dated Parker Posey?" And he's like, "Well, just like a few dates." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Listen, I'll preface this by saying Josie and the Pussycats is not a great movie, but it is a perfect movie, and I need to know more. And that's when I realized I was the only person at this table who had seen Josie and the Pussycats. Mm.
So, like, when you asked, like, did you date Parker Posey in her Josie and the Pussycats era? He was probably like, oh, no. I don't know what that means.
I don't think so. I don't know. But, hey, dear listener, if you haven't seen Josie and the Pussycats, again, it's not a good movie, but it is an excellent movie. It's perfect. But yeah, apparently they went to, I think, grad school together. Mm-hmm. And they were like in some classes together and they went on like several dates. And I was like, well, what was it like? How'd they go? Like, what's she like? And mm-hmm. We went on some dates and she seemed like, I was just like, wow, she wants to be an actor. Oh, she doesn't have it. It's like, okay. That really worked out. And he's like, yeah. So, anyway, she's incredibly popular now and making lots of money. And I guess was just on White Lotus. And now he's in Stanton, Virginia. So, I forgot I dated Parker Posey. Unbelievable. These people. God. All right. That's all my stories for tonight. Do you have anything else?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm ready to go.
Anyone that you know of has dated someone fun?
No. Only famous person I ever really encountered. Well, I did yell at Mike Gershon in airport a few months ago, but I don't feel like that. I don't feel like I met him. I just yelled at him.
Yeah.
In a silent airport, which I think I told you this, didn't I?
You did. This was, tell everybody.
So Michael Gersh is the general manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. He's responsible for personnel decisions and whatnot.
He's had a good yelling coming his way for a long time.
Yeah, he's had a pretty rough few years. And I noticed him in the Southwest line flying down to Florida for spring training. This is in February, I guess. And I'm like three lines over from him. And I notice him. He has like a distinct haircut. He's, better put together than most people in the Southwest line, if you can imagine.
yeah, why is he flying Southwest?
I have no idea. Yeah, that kind of let me know where he ranks. And I yell, like, apparently louder than I should have. Yo, Mike Gersh, you got to get rid of Arenado, man. And the whole airport gets silenter than they were before. And look at me.
And the St. Louis airport, by the way, is a pretty silent airport.
Yeah.
Lambert is not known for being raucous.
So everyone turns and they look at me. And I'm thinking, why are you looking at me?
Look at him.
It's look at Mike Gersh. He's the one not getting rid of Nolan Arenado. Anyway, I went back to playing on my phone and nobody talked to me after that. But I feel like I got my point across.
He's got Rand Paul hair.
He very much has Rand Paul hair. Yes.
Now I will say Nolan Arenado has been kind of a boon to the team this season. So you had,
in it's his good defense,
he didn't listen to you.
In his defense, yeah, I am glad he didn't make any sort of rash decision based on my screaming at him in the Lambert International Airport. only other interaction I had was Sir Ben Kingsley pushed me once at LAX. That's the only one I got.
Are you sure it was him?
I am quite sure it was him. It was him and a security guard that were like rushing him through LAX while I'm like waiting for a flight.
Now, did he personally push you, or was it the security guard who pushed you?
It wasn't pushed like, hey, get the fuck out of here. It was more
just... it was like a nudge.
It was like brushing past, like, I need to get past you, and I need to make sure that you know that I need to get past you. Just, a nudge.
How tall is he?
Much shorter than you think.
I don't know. It's because I think pretty short. He's got short guy energy.
Yeah.
He's wonderful. Like, great on screen. Must be so short, right?
Yes, he is. He is shoulder height. He's shoulder height.
To you? So,
to me, yes. I'm not.
So he's like naval height.
I'm not colossal. To me. Yeah. I'm normal person height. He's shoulder height on me. I'm shoulder height on you. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So do the math.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Yeah. All right. You ever date Parker Posey?
Not yet.
Well, on that note, let's get started. Tonight, I guess, a bit of a content warning. This one does get pretty grisly.
Oh, God, I love grisly ones.
Not in the bear way, like in a real, right. like in a real, like in a grisly way. So just be cognizant of that.
Does anybody end up in like a bucket this episode?
No, but they could. So that'll make more sense in about 45 minutes, but... They could. All right. Let's see. Here is our ghost story tonight. Elizabeth Short was born on July 29th, 1924 in Boston, Mass.
Ah, Boston, Mass.
She loved that fucking Dunkin'. She, Elizabeth, was the third of five daughters to Cleo Alvin Short Jr. That's her father.
That's a name?
Yep.
Cleo Alvin Short Jr.
For the longest time, I was researching this, and I thought that was the mom's name. That's not.
Yeah. Really? No,
okay. Wrong. And as you know, actually, we'll put the curtain back a little bit. Last night, we were texting, and I said, can you record on Monday? And you said, no, I can't. And I said, oh, no, I can't record any other day this week. Can you do tomorrow? And he said, yeah. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to try real hard to to find something. And what I found is sometimes I research, I'll Google stuff to find an idea, and I'll be like, that one seems too big to take on. Like, I'll be researching that for weeks. Uh-huh. But when you have, like, 20 hours to do it, mm-hmm. sometimes those are the first Google results and you're like, fuck it, let's go. And that's what this is. So we're gonna this is fun.
So it's gonna be a research along, it sounds like. Like we're both gonna research it. Okay, good. I like this.
So 35 daughters to Cleo Alvin Short and Phoebe Mae Sawyer Short.
That's definitely a girl name.
Yeah. So yep. You get it. Elizabeth's sisters were named Virginia Mae West. Mm-hmm. Dorothea Schlosser.
Did these women all become serial killers? Because they all have the three names. This is very confusing to me.
It's possible.
Okay.
Elnora Chalmers.
Okay.
And Muriel Short.
Hmm.
So I don't, and I didn't have time to investigate this further.
But I have some questions.
Yeah. You may notice that, like, we're talking about the names, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was assuming, writing these down, that like it's first name, middle name. Mm-hmm. And it's in one case, maybe first name, middle name, other middle name. Mm-hmm. But then the last one does have first name, last name Short. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It seems as if they all have different last names, which feels crazy. So I don't know. Any theories here?
I mean, obviously one of them is that they're abducting these children. That's one option, and just not changing the names.
Wikipedia did not suggest that. Okay. So I don't know.
Okay. Another is some sort of odd tradition, in an attempt to like obfuscate their heritage. I don't know.
When you do your birth certificate, could you say like my child's name is this different last name?
Yes, yes. I don't know if you're aware of this.
You write it in, right?
I don't know if you're aware of this, but that has occurred to one of our children. Were you aware of this?
No.
When
please tell me more.
When Stella was born, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with this as well, because I'm sure you're the person filling out all this paperwork as Aaron like finally rested.
No, I was like, Aaron, there's some clipboard. Can you handle this? Like,
can you handle this? My popcorn's almost ready.
Bellatro is here, and I'm really excited.
So they hand you the sheet of paper, and it's literally as simple as that. It's like just a sheet of paper that's like, oh yeah, give your kid a name. Yeah. Make sure it's not stupid. And you're like, okay.
I've never been scareder in my life.
Oh yeah.
More scared is, I don't know, than like feeling it like, oh my god, is this, am I spelling it right? Are they gonna read this?
Oh
like,
yeah.
Oh no.
So that's how I felt the second time. But the first time I was a little more cavalier about it. And I wrote Stella, that's her first name, and then asks for a middle name, and I put her middle name, which was Amy's maiden name, and then last name, my last name. Perfect, good. Send it off. Yeah. They don't give you a copy of the form. It's not one of those like filled out in triplicate things. They don't email you.
It is weird.
It's extremely final, and no records are kept of it. So, but again, we're riding the high of our first kid and all this kind of stuff.
And you know your last name.
Yeah, I knew my last name. It was like written on her little band on her wrist or ankle or whatever. So I figured no one's that stupid to fuck this up. And they're all pretty simple words, right?
Uh-huh.
So when we file, it takes until we file taxes the following year. And I'm filling out Stella's name on our tax form with her social security number. And it keeps getting rejected. It keeps saying, nope, nobody by that name exists. And I'm thinking, I'm not so stupid that I'm mistyping this, right? Like, it's three really simple words. Yeah. And after, like, the third time, I think, what the fuck? So I go back and I look at her social security card, right? And I notice, for the first time ever, there is an extra space between her first name and her middle name. And a cold, feeling rushes over me when I realize her middle name is a space. And her last name is her middle name and her last name mushed together into one name.
Oh, no.
And just so you're aware, the statute of limitations on getting that corrected is before they issue the Social Security card.
Which well, obviously, that makes no sense.
That's, right, yeah.
That's
so that's already done. I contact the hospital like, hey, you guys fucked this up royally. What's wrong with you guys? And they just like claim ignorance. Oh, yeah, we don't keep those forms. We destroy those forms as soon as we fill them out. It's up to you to figure it out. So we talked to lawyers. We talked to family practice lawyers. They're like, oh, you fucked up the last name? Oh, no.
You fucked up good, you fucked bud. Up
the
good.
That's the big one. First names, middle names, nicknames.
We can do those, no We can problem.
Change all of them. Seriously, not a big deal. Last name, no. And I said, why is it so hard? They go, well, in case you're trying to run from creditors. I said, she's 7 weeks old. She's not running from creditors.
The twist is she was running from creditors.
God. Still her last name. Still her last name even today.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is nigh impossible to get a change, especially now that we moved to a new
She's
state.
She's a teenager. Can you just fix this?
She has a passport with the weirdo last name on it.
Shut up, really?
Yep. Still to this day.
I think you're doing her no favors here by not getting this done.
Yeah. So
this is
We have a friend of ours, a friend of ours from college, Jessica. I won't say her last name. Our friend Jessica from college, the exact same situation.
Really?
Exact same situation. Hospital fucked it up, accidentally put two last names instead of a middle name and a last name. And her parents also agreed it was so difficult to change that they said, you know what? When you become an adult, you change it to whatever the fuck you want. And she did. She grew up and she got married and she changed it to her husband's last name, made up a new middle name for herself. And done deal. So
it's incredible to me on multiple levels. One of them being, how do I not know this story? It's amazing.
It's not something I bring up at parties very often. I don't come off very well in the story, if you can imagine.
No, that's true. You don't. And now you've told, I think, over 1,000 people last check.
Well, maybe one of them is a family law practitioner. That'll be a big help.
Boy. Hey, we're looking for one more unpaid intern, specifically family law practitioner.
This is worth a free Ghost Plus subscription. I'll be perfectly honest. If you can figure out my kid's last name, I'm sorry, my last name fuck up, that's worth a free Ghost Plus
subscription. Yeah, we are at hello@isthisaghost.com. Let us know if you want to be a...
need some references, though.
Plus an exchange.
Need some references, though. I'm not...
Of course. We're not, yeah.
Yeah,
we're
Jeremy.
Handing these things out. Yeah,
Jeremy, you're not doing this, okay? You are...
We're on to you now, Jeremy. Yeah. So
you're already making enough money off this podcast.
I don't know if that part made it into this episode, but...
we know you're doing okay, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, boy. Where were we?
Wish I knew. We are 30 seconds into this episode.
We have so much. I thought it's going to be a short one. We have so much longer to go. Okay. So she had sisters, several. So there's five of them. We read the names. Her dad. So the dad, Cleo.
Yes.
He was a U.S. Navy sailor from Virginia.
Oh, hey. A little hometown boy for you.
Yeah, a little hometown boy. Her mother was from Maine. Mm-hmm. And they got married in Portland, Maine. Yeah, the Portland no one cares about.
Yes, the Portland you and I visited one time. You recall?
We did.
We did.
Yeah.
We set foot in Portland, Maine, and we said, this is a shithole. What in the
and
world?
And we literally set foot and not 2 feet.
We slowed down, and we cracked open the car doors, and we kind of Flintstoned it for a second. Okay, that counts. We'll see ya.
We did. It was not in Portland, but we did near Portland get some pretty good seafood, though, on the
That's
coast.
That's true, yes. A
little shack overlooking the ocean, so Indeed. That was good. So they get married there in 1918. They eventually settle down in Medford, Massachusetts, which is a near suburb, I believe, of Boston. Mm-hmm. All right. And of course, that's where Elizabeth is born, in Boston. Now, Cleo's job was he built miniature golf courses.
I got 4 questions here right off the bat. How miniature? How is a big question?
I think just your standard mini golf, you know.
Oh, okay. Misunderstood.
Oh, yeah. It's not
thinking
in a bottle.
I'm thinking model golf courses.
Yeah,
I'm thinking, this is mini Pebble
golf.
Beach.
He's building mini golf.
It's Pebble Beach at 1/2000th scale.
Okay, I see.
Pebble Beach on the head of a pin.
That would also be very impressive, certainly.
Yeah.
No, he's building mini golf.
Okay.
In 1920s.
Yeah. I literally thought the mini golf courses were just invented by whoever bought the parking lot that the mini golf course was going into. He just like bought a parking lot and a few hundred square yards of AstroTurf and a weekend. And there you go.
Mini golf feels very solidly like a 1970s drug-fueled idea that yes. really took off. And I was shocked to learn this was happening in the 20s. He had made a pretty good living, but he lost almost all of his savings in the 1929 stock market crash. Heading into the Depression, he loses everything. People are no longer so interested in building mini golf.
I was going to say, yeah, there's some professions that survived the Great Depression. I'm thinking this one doesn't.
Mini golf designer is not one of them.
It has to wait until the boys come back home from WW2 before anybody wants to play mini golf ever again.
And that's when he uprooted his family and moved them to Branson, Missouri. He said, when the industry comes back, this will be the hot spot.
We stay here, keep the powder dry for a few decades.
So he loses all, basically all of his money in the crash. And a few months later, his car is found abandoned on the Charlestown Bridge. Ooh. And he is never seen again.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the assumption, of course, is he drove his car there. Mm-hmm. Removed himself from his car there, right. And then threw himself over the side of the bridge into the Charles River and drowned.
Okay.
So now her husband's dead, and she's got 5 kids to raise.
Right.
So Phoebe is like, son of a bitch. She takes a job as a bookkeeper to support the family.
Okay.
This is not a great living for the family. Like, you know, it's... She's making money,
right.
Which is good.
Sure, yeah.
Food on the table, but not a lot of food. Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth, our heroine here, she in particular has a pretty serious medical issue. She was prone to bronchitis and severe asthma attacks.
Ooh, not good for this era. This is not a clean living era right here. This is
no. No. And it's going to get worse in about 3 seconds. It was so bad that when she was 15, she had lung surgery.
Oh, 1930s lung surgery.
So let's see. She was born in 1924, so 34, like 1939 lung surgery.
Oh my gosh.
Fucking imagine.
So the house I live in was built in 1939. And I'm imagining, just from looking at the general construction quality of my own home, if anybody that was a peer of those people had touched me with a knife.
I would have taken their hand and put that knife right into my forehead because please brain dead me.
Oh, 1939 lung surgery. Oh,
can you imagine? Jesus Christ. Now the surgery goes actually shockingly okay.
She survives.
She survives. And there's no, as far as I can tell, like no lasting effects actually from the surgery.
Okay.
Like she's fine. Like it works. It's a good surgery, and I cannot believe it.
The doctor is as shocked as anybody. She's a tough girl. She survived everything we threw at her. I don't know.
We literally put a kitchen sink in her lung, and it didn't fit, and it was stretched. It tore, but she's fine. It goes great. And afterward, her doctor suggests that maybe, like, just to be safe, so she doesn't, you know, kind of have to come back here because we can't do this twice. Maybe she would do better in a milder climate to prevent further, you know, respiratory issues. So Phoebe, the mom, she sends Elizabeth to Miami for the next 3 winters.
Ooh.
No? No good?
No, I mean, that sounds like a very fun 3 winters to me.
You got Mr. Worldwide down there. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's having a blast. Now, Elizabeth didn't find a lot of stability in this life, obviously, because she's spending her winters in Florida, but her non-winters not in Florida. So that's, among other things, is going to fuck with your school year. So she drops out of high school during her sophomore year. So this whole thing is, it's challenging for the whole family. Like, they're, you know, the mom is alone and Elizabeth has these health issues and she's sending her to Florida for part of the year and there's she's four other kids.
And like, now she's in a reggaeton band and you don't know if you like that. It's
she's got these dreads, but you're pretty sure they're not real, but you don't want to ask because you want to be insensitive. Like, it's weird. In late 1942, Phoebe receives a letter from her husband, Cleo.
Oh.
Who is not dead.
Mm-hmm.
He is, in fact, super alive.
I get the impression he had just seen It's a Wonderful Life, like, the year before. And he's like,
oh.
Nah, that's an idea right there. I'll jump off the bridge. Uh-huh. Clarence will rescue me. He'll bring it. This has got to work. It's got to work.
It's got to work. I'll fly away to, let's see here, California. So he's very alive. He sends an apology letter to Phoebe from California, or which is where he went to start his new life. Now, I didn't have a lot of time to research Phoebe's reaction to this letter. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was very well received. I can't imagine it was. So sorry I faked my death several years ago. Hope you're good. I'm in paradise.
How are the kids, by the way?
But in December of that same year, Elizabeth, who is now 18 years old, she's like, actually, Mom, fuck you. I'm out. And she moves out to Vallejo, California to live with her super cool dad. Now, she has not seen him since she was 6 years old.
Okay.
And now she's 18. So she has very few memories of him. Mm-hmm. But she's like, it's got to be better than this, I guess. And we've all been to Massachusetts, so
yeah. We
get it. She finds Cleo working at a shipyard in San Francisco Bay. Sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Living La Vida Loca right there.
They start arguing immediately.
Oh.
And less than 1 month later, Elizabeth moves out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Takes a 6-month train back to Boston and...
Well, let's find out what she does. She takes a job at the base exchange at Camp Cook.
Hmm.
So a base exchange, you know what this is?
Is it like a the on base store essentially?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like a retail store on a US military base. So she's doing that, and fun fact,
wham!
Camp Cook is now called Vandenberg Space Force Base.
Oh, they got into the Space Force game. Okay.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we've heard about Space Force as a nation.
Must mean they're doing a great job. You know,
they're doing great, yeah. Doge hasn't cut any Space Forces, so they must be doing great. Really efficient and really Space Forcing it. So anyway, she's at Camp Cook. She's got this job, but she also needs a place to live because she has left her father's house. And she finds a place to live with a U.S. Army Air Force sergeant who reportedly abused her a lot. So that's obviously very bad. A few months later, she leaves Camp Cook, and she leaves that asshole, and she moves to Santa Barbara.
Oh, okay.
Santa Barbara, northwest, a little bit of L.A., like right on the coast there. And that's where she was arrested on September 23rd for underage drinking at a bar.
Oh, she's still underage after all this?
Yeah, she's still 18 or just 19.
Man, she had quite the life to get an underage drinking ticket. She's probably like, I thought I was 21.
Like, am I not? Like, Jesus Christ. All right, take me in. So she's arrested, and the juvie authorities, they send her back to Massachusetts.
Oh.
It's just got to be the fucking worst.
Expensive.
waste and fraud. Uh-huh. It's get Elon in there. He'll fix that up. So she goes back to Massachusetts, but she's not having that because she's obviously left there for a good reason. So she's like, nope, goodbye. And so as soon as she gets there, she heads back down to Florida instead.
There you go. Everything was cool in Florida.
Yeah. I mean, it's very different Florida than now, I think.
I'm going to get the band back together. Everything's going to be easy peasy down in Florida.
Going to the Copa. It's going to be great. While she was there, she met a man named Major Matthew Michael Gordon Jr. And I want to be clear, that man does indeed have three names that are all first names. Matthew Michael Gordon Jr. He was a decorated Army Air Force officer of the 2nd Air Commando Group.
Mm-hmm.
When they met, Gordon was training for deployment to Southeast Asia for World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he did deploy. And she was like, oh my gosh, good luck. I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Then Gordon crashed his plane somewhere in India, which feels like a crazy place to crash your plane for this particular war. But he was okay. But while he was in the hospital recovering, mm-hmm. he wrote her a letter asking her to marry him.
Oh, ooh, must be on the good drugs.
So, so Elizabeth writes back saying she accepts. She will marry him.
Mm. Okay.
Very good. Yeah. Gordon is so excited that he crashes a plane a second time. And this time he dies.
Oh.
So a couple years later, so now Elizabeth is, she's a single again, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years later, she's like, Florida sucks. And she goes back out west for a visit, this time to Los Angeles.
Okay.
She's kind of like hovering around Los Angeles. For the, now she's like in the city.
Mm-hmm. Steer clear of dad. Steer clear of the bad dude at the army base.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But I can thread this needle. Mm-hmm. I can do this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a big state. No one's going to know I'm here.
No, not at all. So she goes there. She goes there to Los Angeles in particular to visit another acquaintance of hers, who was a guy who had formerly been in Florida, Army Air Force Lieutenant Joseph Gordon Fickling.
Okay. So she has a type.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Do you have more than one first name? And are you an Air Force, Army Air Force person?
Are you in the Air Force and also a serial killer? Well, boy, oh boy. Do I have your number?
It's interesting that you say that because...
Oh, no.
Well, let's just keep going.
Okay.
So he was stationed in Long Beach, which is a great spot. Mm-hmm. You and I have been to Long Beach. We stopped at... there was a Comic-Con.
LA Comic-Con
was in Long Beach. Wizard
World was there. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. And that's the best... by the way, hey, here's a pro tip. If you're going to go to the LA area, Long Beach is the best airport to fly into.
Mm-hmm.
It is so easy. It's so great. It's one of those cool airports where you like walk off the plane. There's no terminal. You just like
mm-hmm.
walk onto the tarmac.
Walk straight, oh, walk straight so to your car. Oh, this is great. Yeah.
It is the worst airport to fly out of because there is no space for lines, but it's great to fly into. anyway, so he's stationed in Long Beach. She's loving it, but she gets there and she's thinking like, this is cool. Like I'm here for a visit, but this is crazy, but mm-hmm. should I live here? I think I should. So she stays. And, oh, by the way, so here is a photo of Elizabeth Short for you.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got that California look to her.
Yeah. Her hair is crazy.
Yes.
But
I didn't say what kind of Californian she looks like, but she definitely looks like maybe she's screaming at you on Rodeo Drive. That's
but the hair says screaming on Rodeo Drive. Mm. The face says penthouse on Rodeo Drive. I don't know.
I can see. Yeah. 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 Screaming at you out a window on Rodeo Drive.
Put it that way. Yes. Yes. Put some curlers in here and you got something. So that's her. So let's see. Okay. So she's going to stay in LA. She gets a job as a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
She rents a room behind the Florentine Gardens nightclub, which is on Hollywood Boulevard. Mm-hmm. She's right in the center of the action. She's not by any means wealthy, but she's making a living and life is good.
Mm-hmm.
In January of 1947, Elizabeth goes on a quick trip to San Diego with her boyfriend, who is a 25-year-old married man.
Uh-huh.
And his name is Red Manley.
I got two requirements for any guy I'm going to date.
So they go to San Diego. Now, according to Manley... And I will say this is actually not too recently, or not too, sorry, quite recently, and not too past, we talked about a Little House on the Prairie podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know how familiar, how far you got in the series, but Manly is you know, a nickname for Alonzo, and so we're kind of back to I don't know. It's like a sign. We should maybe we should think about this.
Okay.
But according to Manly, Elizabeth has to get back to L.A. to meet one of her sisters who was in town visiting from Boston. So they leave San Diego on January 9th, 1947. Mm-hmm. He drops her off at the Biltmore Hotel.
Oh, okay.
In downtown L.A. Now, some accounts state that the staff of the Biltmore did indeed see Elizabeth in the lobby of the hotel that afternoon.
Okay.
Start using a telephone.
Things are starting to come apart in the story.
I don't know why you'd say that.
Some claim she made it to the hotel.
Yeah. So, like, she's being seen on a telephone in the lobby. Not long after that, she was allegedly seen by patrons of the Crown Grill Cocktail Lounge on Olive Street, which is about 3/8 of a mile from the Biltmore. So not it's
walkable.
Close.
Yeah, it's walkable.
Yeah. Yeah. 6 days later, Elizabeth's naked body was found in a vacant lot on the west side of South Norton Avenue in the neighborhood of Linert Park, which is mostly undeveloped at that time.
Not walkable.
Not walkable. No. That's
not a walkable area. That's a shame.
If you're going to walk there, your clothes would probably stay on your body as you did so.
Yes.
Yeah. So it is suspicious. Her body had been severed into two pieces at the waist.
Oh, okay. Top and bottom.
Yes.
Okay.
Make a joke?
No. I just again, want to make sure my mental image is up to date.
Well, I hate to say this, but we will get into some detail about it. and you will notice remember I did do a content warning at the beginning of this. Now, the body had also been entirely drained of blood before it was dropped, leaving her skin, quote, a pallid white.
Mm-hmm.
The medical examiner determined that she had been dead for about 10 hours before her body was discovered.
Ooh.
So the last time she was seen was 6 days earlier, but probably dead 10 hours before 6 days later. So
not a great five and a half days there. Doesn't sound like
right. It. Yeah. Not good. Her body had been washed by the killer.
Oh.
go ahead.
I'm just trying to get into the mechanics of like washed before severing, washed after severing. I think you washed after severing. Because severing seems like a very, very messy process.
Yeah. Now we will get into it.
Okay. I don't want to jump ahead. Yes.
Yeah. Now it was washed by gasoline.
Oh, okay. That does get a lot of stains out. Surprising amount.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Mostly fingerprints.
Yeah. Yeah.
As we'll learn.
Or have paint.
Go ahead. Have I used that to hide fingerprints? No, Patrick. Thank you for asking. I have not. Have had no need. Her face had been slashed from the corners of her mouth to her ears, which is apparently called the Glasgow smile.
Aha! Uh-huh, yes, that's
what they're doing in Glasgow, but
yeah. or the why so serious smile, I believe as well.
That's what I would call it. Absolutely. She had multiple cuts on her thighs and breasts, and entire portions of flesh had been sliced away from her breasts.
Oh.
Quote, the lower half of her body was positioned a foot away from the upper.
Okay.
And her intestines had been tucked neatly beneath her buttocks.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So she could
any questions so far?
No, I mean, then it sounds like a pretty uncomfortable place to sit. At least you have something to sit on. I don't know.
Okay. the corpse had been posed with her hands over her head. Her elbows bent at right angles.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess like this.
Yeah.
And her legs. Yes.
Lounging.
Yeah. Super chill.
Yes.
And her legs spread apart.
Oh, not chill.
No. The medical examiner also found the body had been cut in half using a technique from the 1930s called hemicorporectomy.
Okay. I'm learning today that there are techniques for cutting a body in half. I really thought it was just
to blow your fucking mind because I'm going to first try to describe this without throwing up. Mm-hmm. And it's this. The lower half of the body is removed by transecting the lumbar spine.
Uh-huh. Right. That's the tough part. Right.
Yeah. That's the hacksaw. Mm-hmm. Like, grrr.
Yeah.
Thus severing the intestine at the duodenum.
Yes.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that separates the legs, genitalia, urinary system, pelvic bones, anus, and rectum.
Okay.
From the top part.
Right. Yes. You keep the rectum now, at the bottom part.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's where it went. That's, yeah, of course. Where else would it go? Now, this was considered a major procedure that was only recommended.
I'm sorry. I really want to know what kind of ailment. I mean, because she's already had the lung surgery. She's already had it pretty bad, right?
Yeah. She's had what you thought would be the worst possible thing.
She's like,
yeah, you were wrong by a lot.
I'm sure that doctor after the lung surgery is like, man, ma'am, you are over the hump. It is smooth sailing from here on out. This is the worst surgery you will ever have.
So I want to be very clear here. This hemicorporectomy.
Yes.
As a procedure. Mm. Is generally reserved for people who are like, I want you to live. Mm-hmm. Let me sever your entire bottom half from your upper half.
Mm, okay. Like
if so you, that you will live.
So like if a zombie bit you in the leg.
That's exactly
okay,
right.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Machete, shunk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So this is the whole, this was a major procedure, of course. It's pretty serious.
This one gets like its own chapter at the end of the book, really.
Here's minor, here's major, and here is this fucking shit. You won't believe it. You have to take a breathalyzer to make sure you've had a drink before you open this part of the book, because Jesus Christ. This is recommended only as a last resort for people with severe and potentially fatal illnesses, such as, and boy, here's a lot of words I'm not going to be able to pronounce. Gosh,
where are we? Gangrene? Gangrene's probably one.
No, you would think. Osteomyelitis. Osteomyelitis.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Is one.
I'm familiar.
Some sort of tumors that I've inadvertently deleted the first word of. Severe traumas and intractable decubiti in the pelvis.
Okay.
Any questions?
No, I mean, no more than I had 3 minutes ago. It's,
all right. I'm still. I have some definitions for you. So osteomyelitis is an infectious inflammation of the bone marrow.
Oh, okay.
Which does sound pretty bad.
Sure.
So I guess you don't want to spread to other bone marrow, so you chop off half the bones.
Mm-hmm.
And then decubiti, those are bed sores.
Oh,
that one feels less like we should cut someone in half, but it's intractable bed sores in the pelvis.
Okay.
So I don't know, but I don't know, but it's pretty common. By 2009, medical literature documented 66 cases of this procedure.
Goodness.
66 people have been cut in half for medicine. For bed sores. It's fucking crazy. I learned so much on this podcast. Anyway, there are some other details about how they found her body that I don't think we should get into.
Okay, that's fine.
It's bad.
Sure.
That I think has been clear, but like it's more bad than it seems, and it's fine, and we get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Point has been made.
She's dead, which is the key piece of info here. The FBI get involved, of course, and they identify Elizabeth using her fingerprints. Those were on file from her 1943 arrest as an underage drinker.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that in comedy is called a callback.
So whoever killed her and was so willing to do hours of gruesome, grotesque surgery did not think to themselves, maybe I should also cut her fingertips off. Maybe that will give me a little bit more rope. Nope, didn't think of it. Okay, fair enough.
All right. As soon as she's identified, reporters from the Los Angeles Examiner contact her mother, Phoebe. You may remember from earlier in the story. Mm-hmm. Now, these reporters, they didn't think Phoebe was likely to talk to them if Phoebe knew that her daughter was dead.
Oh, okay.
Right? So instead of telling her, hi, your daughter has been murdered and we want to ask you questions, instead they told her that Elizabeth had won a beauty contest.
Oh.
Uh-huh. And said, we would love if you could tell us all about your beautiful daughter. And so Phoebe is thrilled. And she is so proud of Elizabeth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks for about an hour about their lives and about Elizabeth. Until the journalists have decided they have no more information to glean from this. And then they tell her, this has been great. Actually, we did call because your daughter has been murdered and mutilated. So that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then the reporters, to make up for this, they offer some to good. Pay. Yeah. It's some good and some bad.
Yeah. This is classic good cop, bad cop stuff. This
is yeah. Which is what you want out of journalism, I think. Yeah, for sure. They offer to pay for Phoebe to fly out to L.A. so she can help with the investigation.
Oh, okay. They weren't confident they'd be able to solve it themselves.
This is the reporters who are like, yeah, the police. Well, and we'll talk a little about the police. They need some help.
Okay, fair enough.
So Phoebe, who is very angry, of course, she does say, she's like, okay, fuck it. Fine. Yes, I will go and I'll help.
Yes.
So
free trip to LA.
Yeah. Okay. I love sunshine. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen it in decades. And so she goes out, they fly her out. But it turns out, the reporters didn't want her to actually help the investigation. They really just wanted to hide her away. So no other journalists could, kill their scoop.
Back to bad cop. Okay.
Yeah. 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 You will probably not be surprised to learn the Examiner completely sensationalized this case. And I should note, this is a paper that at the time was owned by William Randolph Hearst. Mm-hmm. Not a cool dude, historically. So they're just like firing us up. So they lied about details of the case. Like, for example, Elizabeth actually was last seen wearing a black tailored suit. Like a very actually kind of nice, respectable, good suit. Mm-hmm. The newspaper described it as, quote, a tight skirt and sheer blouse. So there was a lot of details like that. The papers described her as a, quote, adventuress who, quote, prowled Hollywood Boulevard. And they also took the liberty and they gave Elizabeth a nickname. That nickname was the Black Dahlia.
Ah.
On January 21st, about a week after her murder, the editor of the Los Angeles Examiner, James Richardson, he gets a call, and the man on the other line claims to be Elizabeth Short's killer. He tells Richardson that he would eventually turn himself in, but not before he's had some more fun with the police.
Mm-hmm.
He also tells Richardson, gives him a heads up to, quote, expect some souvenirs of Beth Short in the mail.
Okay. Were there missing bits? I didn't hear about any missing bits so far.
I don't know. Let's scroll back. Let's find. I mean, when you have a person, when you have them,
right.
When you them. Yes. Like, yeah, I know, yeah.
really, we're gonna have to help
emphasize that L there. It's really important.
We have to really help out the closed captioning on that one right there.
Yeah, you're gonna miss some bits. Mm-hmm. 3 days later, a manila envelope is found addressed to the Los Angeles Examiner and other Los Angeles papers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not how mail works.
No, absolutely not. That mailman is so fucking mad at this point.
God damn it. Yeah.
And it's wet, too. What the fuck is this?
Why is it red? I hate this. The letters listing out the quote-unquote address of the Los Angeles Examiner and other Los Angeles newspapers, the letters were cut and pasted from newspaper clippings.
Mm.
there was also a message on the other side of the envelope that said, in cut and paste letters, "Here is Dahlia's belongings, letter to follow." They opened it up, and inside were Elizabeth's birth certificate, business cards, photographs, some names that were written down in paper, and an address book with the name Mark Hansen on the cover. The entire package has been cleaned with gasoline.
Okay.
Now, even so, it wasn't fully cleaned because they do get some partial fingerprints.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, fuck you, idiot. You fucked up real good. Because they can probably, you know, there's a chance they can make a match from partial fingerprints. They lift the prints. They send them to the FBI. On the way to the FBI, the fingerprints were compromised and they could not be analyzed. How? I do not know.
You have one job and it's not to touch the fingerprints. That's your only job.
I do not know, but Jesus Christ.
This has to be like where Ziploc bags were born out of. Has to be.
Okay, we'll fix this. It says Procter & Gamble or whoever. They also found a purse and a woman's black suede shoe in an alley near where the body was found. Mm-hmm. So they go and check it out. And those had also been cleaned with gasoline. No fingerprints.
They should probably check out if anybody's been buying a lot of gasoline recently.
That's what I would do. However, as we know from the episode about the lake and the thing, that's not always going to get you there. So the search goes on. Now, they interview over 150 men who they think could be suspects. Like, they're just, it's a wide net that they're casting here.
I've been to LA. I get it.
They have 750 investigators working on this case.
Shoo.
It's crazy.
Man.
It's crazy that they, a lot of that many people, and also crazy that many people could not fucking find this killer because they don't. Spoiler alert, they don't. An LA city councilman posted a $10,000 reward for information leading to the killer, which in today's money is about $150,000. And so now all sorts of people call with false information because they all want this money. And it's completely clogs the investigation. The police are like, pull your fucking offer. Like, this is crazy. Stop. Please stop. And he's like, no, we got to find the killer because, you know, politics is so good. So it's going very badly. Anyway, so a couple months later, on March 14th, the police find a pile of men's clothes on Venice Beach. Tucked inside one of the shoes in that pile was a suicide note. And it read, quote, "To whom it may concern, I have waited for the police to capture me for the Black Dahlia killing, but have not. I am too much of a coward to turn myself in, so this is the best way out for me. I couldn't help myself for that or this. Sorry, Mary." End of note.
So who gets the money? Is that not? It's fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure somebody gets the money.
It's good your head's in the right place. That's good. So the case is never actually solved, though in the ensuing years, during the investigations that continue, several people confessed to the crime. And several other people said they knew who had done it. There's one person who said a father or father-in-law had done it. And that's actually maybe the closest we've gotten, but like, it's all weird. So it's never solved. It's not a good scene. In the 1990s, an employee of the Biltmore Hotel named James Moore gets into the elevator. There's already a woman standing inside and she's pretty and she's dressed all in black. But she never looks up at him. Eyes low, eyes to the ground.
Headphones on. I don't want to talk to this guy.
We've all been there.
Literally every single elevator I've stepped into, this is my experience as well.
When the elevator stops on the sixth floor, which is not the button he pushed. Doors open. He expects her to get out, but she doesn't move. So he gently kind of tells her, like, oh, hey, sixth floor, is this yours? And she doesn't answer, but she does move. She walks out of the elevator. When she passes James, he feels a cold chill.
She message sent.
Yeah, I think so. So she steps out of the elevator. Doors are closing, right? As they're closing, the woman looks back over her shoulder and opens her mouth to say something, but right as the doors close. And so James, like, what? So he hits a button to open the door. So right, immediately, yeah, they open again. She's gone.
Ooh.
No one there.
Could have the night of his life.
You really fucked up, James. You dumb virgin. You could have had such a great night.
Everything I've said about Florida ghosts, it goes opposite for LA ghosts.
Oh, you do have sex with LA ghosts, without question. A few months later, James was looking at a book of LA mysteries, and he recognizes the face of the woman in the elevator. And it was the Black Dahlia. A lot of other guests and employees of the Biltmore have seen her, usually in the lobby or on the 10th or 11th floors. She's always wearing a black dress. She never makes eye contact. She also is sometimes seen in the hotel mirrors.
Oh,
in the mirror, doing this, doing that, primping your face, boop, boop, boop. Oh, fuck. The Black Dahlia is there. Her presence is always accompanied by intense feelings of sadness and dread. And if you go to the Biltmore Hotel in LA today, you can experience the spirit of the Black Dahlia yourself, because they have a fun little cocktail at the bar called the Black Dahlia. And this cool little cocktail seems pretty tasteless in both senses of the word. It is citrus vodka, Chambord, and Kahlua.
Oh, okay.
Feels pretty gross. And that is how they honor the memory of Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia.
Ugh.
No?
Yeah. I'm slightly less grossed out by the drink than I am the surgery we discussed, but they are, they're in the same,
I guess that's,
they're in the same realm. Yeah.
Yeah, they are. That is the right kind of order of operations.
I don't see myself encountering the surgery in my life at any point, but if someone could definitely offer me that drink, and I would have to say, no, thank you.
I'll tell you, you think you wouldn't encounter it, but 66 cases.
It's only a matter of time. Yeah. That's
you could be a statistic.
If it was invented in the 1930s, that's like about once a year they do this.
So someone's got to get chopped in half. So, but yeah, I think of the two, like being chopped in half or having this cocktail, I mean, certainly, certainly cocktail. Having this cocktail or any other experience in life, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No cocktail. Seems bad. It was bad. That's the story of the Black Dahlia. You familiar with this?
I am familiar with the Black Dahlia. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
How intimately?
I mean, I knew about the face cutting and the not being solved thing. There's also a death metal band called the Black Dahlia Murder. I'm familiar with them as well.
That feels definitely.
So, you know, it's... Yeah.
There's a movie pretty recently. Movie, right? Who was in that? Did I see that? 2006. Boy, I'm so old. So old. ScarJo Hansen. Yeah, ScarJo. We love ScarJo on this podcast. Patrick, tell them how pro ScarJo you are.
I'm pretty pro ScarJo.
I don't seem like a creep.
The last thing I would ever want is for anything like this to happen to Scarlett Johansson, ever.
Yeah.
And if it did, don't come asking me because I have nothing to do with it.
You would give up your entire family for this not to happen to Scarlett Johansson. And, and please, no questions. And that is the story of Black Dahlia. Of course, if you want more of the grisly details, there are lots that we did not intentionally. We intentionally did not, I should say.
Really appreciate the lack of slideshow this week. Really appreciate that.
Oh, boy.
No links in the show notes. Google this shit on your own.
Uh-huh. There were, I mean, there are some elements that I absolutely not. Not for us, not now, not ever, not certainly within 18 hours turnaround time.
I don't feel like getting demonetized this week. So
sure we'll don't. Sure don't. So I should tell you, Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes about the Black Dahlia were taken this week by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from my good friend and my real friend, Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jamie Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team consists of Kai Valonis, Jennifer Jones, Sam Murdoch. And our merch is now been overtaken by Fox and Quill Studio. And Mariah of Fox Quill Studio asked me pretty recently, very sincerely, are you sure you want a Necro Drumicon shirt? And I replied, just as sincerely, yeah. Yeah, I do. So they are working on that. And her initial idea is real promising. Very excited about this. So keep an eye out. And that's it for this week. So thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. And until then, I don't go on dates. They always end badly. And one of them might end up with you being featured on Is This a Ghost?